Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:14 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is July 6th. I thought we'd kick off with 3 month treasuries. We've had a pop on the upside, so we're up to 1.83%. So then let's just take a look at the established range for the Fed funds rate. It's at 1.75, so now the Fed funds is actually below the 3 month for the first time in months, and that's at least a reflection of two important points. The first is that there's less demand for bonds at the very front end of the curve, so that's reflective of the rebound we've seen in treasury prices at the long end. Then there's the second, which is that investors are at least beginning to give some credence to the possibility that the Federal Reserve is in fact going to continue to raise interest rates. And we did have the Fed minutes in here today, but that 3 month yield had gapped higher, so it was moving in anticipation of the Fed minutes. And the conclusion was quite clear that the Federal Reserve intends to continue to raise rates as long as there is an inflationary problem. But of course, that inflationary problem is being, or at least partially, corrected. Oil prices were down $2 again in here today, so we're back now in the region of the $100 level for Brent crude, and testing the region of the 200-day moving average on the lower side of the range. And then West Texas Intermediate has bounced from the lower side of the range and is also testing that $100 level. So we're still in this rangy environment overall. And that tells us more than anything that the arguments are in balance. The arguments are simple enough. On the one hand, there is a lack of additional supply. So the war in Ukraine, the lack of experienced personnel from overseas working in Russia, and all the material they bring with them is curtailing Russian supply. OPEC might be increasing supply, but doing so in a piecemeal fashion. So that's the bullish case. And of course, then there's the fear that if Russia were to shut off its exports of oil to Europe, then prices could go as high as $380 is the number I've seen thrown around. Well, that's an awfully big number. And it does beg the question, where would Russia put the oil that they're still producing? If they are going to stop sending it to Europe. A lot of Russian oil comes from areas that have permafrost. You can't just shut off those wells. The oil is coming out of the ground at 100 degrees Celsius. So it melts the permafrost around the wellhead. You can't just turn it off, because then you're going to have your wellhead refreeze. The longer it's turned off for, the worse it gets. So obviously then, the cost of unfreezing it so that you can start producing again is astronomically high. Therefore, Russia will do whatever is necessary to ensure that those wells remain operational, because once they shut them off, they're not going to be able to turn them back on again. So that's a very significant proportion of Russia's oil. So they might be able to shut off some. They might even have a choice in what they get to do. But there's just no way that Russia is going to allow themselves to shut it off. That's bad news for itself. It's even worse news for its customers. So if we're thinking about why there haven't been overt sanctions on Russian oil, well, that's the reason why. But then we have the rest of the world trying to come up with a way of capping how much money they pay Russia. Well, Russian oil is already trading at a significant discount. So all this talk about capping how much they're going to pay Russia, and perhaps somewhere in the 60 to 80 dollar, or I guess it is still dollars, then what we have is, if we just, I'm just trying to find the fair market value. So Russian crude trades at about $69 right now. And Europe is talking about capping it between $60 and $80. Well, that's nonsense. The price is already at those levels. And as long as there isn't a massive shutoff in supply, which is unlikely, well, then it's just a complete boondoggle in terms of news flow. What's potentially more important is the fact that the European Parliament has shut down a protest to reclassify both natural gas and nuclear as green. So that's opening up the door to more investment in gas and nuclear energy in Europe. Of course, there are people complaining about whether that's going to greenwash it, this sector, but it is at least a reflection of the fact that Europe is moving more towards a realism way of looking at the market rather than purely idealistic. The reality, though, is that uranium's investment outlook is being very much attuned to what's happening in the oil price. So the uranium ETF is right in the region of the 1,000-day moving average and is below it right now. What I found interesting just in looking at various sectors today is that the solar sector has been reasonably steady. It's not trending higher, but at least it's steady here and consolidating between the 1,000 and 200-day moving average. And then the wind sector has also been at least steady, although not nearly as steady as the solar sector. So they're not doing nearly as well as they might do in the event that, or in with the reality that oil prices are exceptionally high. And that's more a reflection of difficulties in manufacturing, problems with supply chains, and then the need for urgent solutions to the problem with Russia. So it's likely, at least, that these sectors will eventually find support and will do somewhat better as we see longer-term solutions being embraced. But in the short term, it's much more likely that we're going to have clear efforts to restart nuclear and restart coal. Well, the one thing that the European decision has done is kill off the potential for investment in coal in the EU. Now, if we look at Drax Group, it surged higher in line with oil and now it is coming back down. So we're below the 200-day moving average. And this is by far the largest pullback we've seen. It's encountering resistance in the region of the peak from back in 2013-14. So even coal is looking a little bit susceptible here to some additional pause and consolidation, or potentially a deeper reaction overall. Then, when we think about what's happening in the UK, well, Boris Johnson is fighting for his job. And the FTSE 100 was quite volatile today. So it popped all the way up to 7,200, still up on the day, up over 1%, but retraced about half of it. And it's still holding the 7,000 level, and there's still the sequence of higher major reaction lows. But it is certainly being insulated by the pound. So the depreciation of the pound was extended in here today. The price is still below 120, but we're still in the region of the 120 level, and we didn't have an accelerated move below it. We might get a bit of a relief rally if Boris Johnson is ousted, but then the range of potential solutions to the inflationary issues that the UK is facing aren't going to change just because Boris Johnson is gone. So That suggests that, but they could, though, blame him for what's gone wrong and then implement some new strategies. It seems like a good time to introduce price controls and set the price control at the prevailing level a week ago, because energy prices are starting to come back down. Food futures, particularly things like soybeans, have pulled back really quite sharply, and there's certainly greater acreage of soybeans being planted this year because of the shortage of fertilizer for corn, and corn's exceptionally demanding in terms of fertilizer use. So we've had really significant pullbacks in some of these agricultural commodities. So that would suggest that at least the short-term inflationary pressures would appear to be under control. But housing hasn't really started to come down yet, and that's problematic. So the 10-year yield was actually up 12 basis points in here today, and pricing in the potential that there will be higher interest rates, and that inflation hasn't quite been got under control yet. But this is a trend that has lost uptrend consistency. The breakout has not been sustained. It's back in the region of the lower side of the previous range. So it's a natural area where we might anticipate a little bit of steadier action. But it's also likely that we're going to have much more volatility in bond pricing. Despite the fact that bond yields were are that bonds generally did not continue to extend their bull market, or their rebound, I should say. Gold prices were down an extra $25 today, so extending the break below the $1,800 level, greatly increasing this potential that we're going to come back down and test the region of the lower side of this range that's been forming for the last 18 months. And that would take prices down potentially another $50. But following a breakdown like this, then we need to see a very clear upward dynamic to check momentum. And silver prices have also extended the decline in early trading and then paused. So we are still right in the region of the $20 level, even though it broke downwards yesterday. It hasn't accelerated lower. Now, it doesn't mean that it won't continue to push lower from here. This is a significant breakdown. But we are short-term oversold, and we could have some pause and consolidation. And prices are lower than they have been for most of the last year. And the stock market has been a little bit steadier. So the risk of contagion selling isn't as pressing today as it has been over the course of the last few weeks. The Nasdaq was also in positive territory yesterday and then again in here today, so coming up towards the 12,000 level. But I remain of the view that rallies are shorting opportunities. Just like we saw in here today with the 10-year future, it got up to test the sequence of lower rally highs and then paused. And it didn't quite put in a downside key reversal, but it does suggest that the sharp rebound that we've had is going to have at least some consolidation. And we're already seeing some consolidation in the stock market, at least on Wall Street. And Europe remains susceptible to additional weakness. The CSI 300 was in negative territory in China today, but this has been a very orderly rebound over the course of the last 3 months. The big question for a number of the Chinese tech companies is, can they push back above their respective 200-day moving averages? So Alibaba is right there, and JD.com has also been quite volatile, but it's above its 1,000-day moving average and testing the 200-day moving average. Tencent is it's been uniquely targeted by the Communist Party, and they definitely don't like video games. So it's seriously underperforming and hasn't been able to push up and through either of those moving averages, and still is in a medium-term downtrend. Electric car company BYD got all the way up to test the upper side of its medium-term range, and it continues to pause here. So it's not coming back in a really dynamic manner either. There's the potential here that the Chinese market will continue to attract inflows because it's less volatile. It's already had a big setback, and the government there is providing additional liquidity, whereas governments everywhere else are, and I should say, central banks everywhere else are taking money away. And when we think about Australia, they raised rates by 50 basis points today. So the ASX is still looking susceptible to additional downside in here. Then when we think about copper prices, they're really oversold in the short term. But this has been a really substantial breakdown. So there's the potential, at least, that prices could rebound from here. And we're in the region of the 1,000-day moving average and the peak from back in 2017 and 18. So it's a potential area of support where we might see some pause or consolidation. But it's a type 2 top formation. We've had a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. So it wouldn't be at all surprising to see some pause and consolidation, maybe even some ranging between current levels and about $4. But it's going to have to do a lot to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. I've got an in-the-money stop on my short position, and I'm not going to sit around if we get more than a short-term rally. Then when we think about the LME Metals Index, it's come right back down to test the 1,000-day moving average, and that 200-day moving average has rolled over. When we then think about the CRB index, well, it's unwinding its overbought condition. Now, it's heavily weighted by oil, but it is starting to come back down. And then if we look at the raw industrial commodities spot index, then this is more emblematic of what's going on in the wider market. So it's well below the 200-day moving average and continuing to push lower from here. I think the base case has to be that we are at the front end of a recession. The 10-year minus the 3-month yield curve spread, contracted again in here today. So it's shaved over 100 basis points off of that spread in less than 6 weeks, and it's continuing to fall here. So it could easily come back down to a negative level in a very short period of time. And that's particularly true if the Federal Reserve follows through and raises rates again by at least 50 basis points in the next month. And the 10-year minus the 2-year was inverted in here today. So it's down to negative 4 basis points. And that's been whipping around a bit in here today. But an inverted yield curve is about the best indicator, lead indicator that we have for future recessions. By the time a recession is confirmed, it's likely that the entire yield curve will be inverted. But the stock market is already pricing in that potential. I think one thing that's important to highlight is the peak on this occasion was way below where peaks have been in the past. And we're in a much more similar environment to what we had in the 1980s. So if that's what we're looking at now, then what we can anticipate is short, sharp cycles. And that will have big drawdowns in stocks and commodities and risk assets generally. And when the yield curve starts to turn around again, and we start to see more money being made available, and interest rates being cut, then we'll have exceptionally sharp rebounds, and we'll have multiple different sectors doing exceptionally well, and those bull trends probably won't last more than about 18 months to 2 years, and then we'll start to see liquidity getting taken in again. The reality is that bond total return charts have broken their uptrends, so it's greatly enhancing the potential that we're going to have a more difficult time with the sustainability of trends, and that we're going to be in more of a trader's environment going forward. But that's not bad news. It just means that we have to be a little bit more activist. Doesn't mean that a trend, and I think when we think about holding periods, trends that last a year or two are going to be reasonably easy to look at. But what it does mean is that we have to be very diligent with consistency characteristics and not giving a lot of leeway when consistency characteristics break lower. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.